Yeah, in response to question raised by Tom about the worker strike in Nigeria, particularly doctors, in the last period, as I've explained earlier, that you know there were a lot of infrastructural collapse. Why? Because you know because of artisan corruption in the system, so the ruling class felt it not necessary, at least to develop the basic fundamentals of society like health, education, and other infrastructures. So, and as a result, there was massive cut on net sector. So, in hospitals are in bad shape. So, and you know, doctors they were in high esteem. And people felt, okay, doctors should continue to work. And doctors felt, how can we be doing operations? Maybe you are operating on a patient who was having heart attack, and suddenly, you know, light went off. And people felt, how can you do that? That there must be an improvement in the nature of theaters, in the hospitals, that the poor qualities of hospitals has to be improved, you know? And some other fights like that, you know, that there's no way you can have hospitals, maybe like a run hospital, like a drug revolving centers. People just go to hospitals, okay, this is the problem I have. But the hospital will tell you they don't have the drugs. Maybe you go outside to go and get the drugs yourself. And you know, these are what doctors are demanding for that. Look, hospitals has to be qualitatively funded. And not that hospitals should be like a consulting firm, you know, consulting clinics. You know, so these are the positions of doctors that look, there must be an improved conditions of hospitals. So that actually led to, you know, the strike that look, you must vote a particular amount, like, okay, let's say 12% of budget on health, you know, as to like 4% currently being budget on health. So these are some of the demands of doctors at that time. And when it was obvious that the ruling class are not prepared at least to meet some of this demand, and they go on strike. And even in this year now, I think health sector budget has actually increased to like 6%. You know, although the ruling class hide under the banner that is because of financial crisis, but at least it shows us that at least if you fight, we can win. But if you don't fight, we can't get anything. And this regime is not a regime that we can just say, okay, we want so. We must fight to get it. Otherwise, all our benefits we lose. And there's a particular maxim in Nigeria that even though you can't improve it, even though you can't provide additional ones, but the already one that we have must be maintained. So these are the positions that some of these doctors were pushing and was actually correct. Then secondly, on there was this lady from Comrades, I don't know your name, come from Leeds.
Oh,
yeah, okay. So you actually asked about Zimbabwe. Yeah, specifically on Zimbabwe, you described that Zimbabwe has been in crisis since 1989 when they started the SAP economic programs. And you know, prior to that time, there was 10 years automatum, you know, for land, you know, like buyback, like Bujwa way of buying back lands, you know, like British government is going to give you money to all those willing buyer, willing sellers. That British government is going to provide money so that some, like a local bourgeoisie who want to buy some of those land from the white farmers, you know, they are going to provide them money and they're going to be paying in like loans, you know. Those are the form of arrangement which Mugabe accepted before he was asked to become the president. So, and you know, from 1980 to 1990, it's 10 years. So after 10 years, people were saying, okay, this is 10 years. We want our land back. But Mugabe, because of the privilege then, and because of some of the promise, you know, because at that time, Zimbabwe economy is experiencing crisis. So, and there's no way he can do it than to succumb to the prayer of the imperialist. So he had to go and accept World Bank IMF loan and promise that they are not going to return those lands to the people. So that was actually the root cause of the problem. So as a result of the crisis, you know, cutting social spending, privatization, and some of other policies contained in World Bank IMF policy. So the crisis broke out in 1997. It was actually bread riots. People don't have bread. There's no food. Hospital is just like it's a place where we commit people to go and die gradually. You know, you just say, okay, go to hospital. And people will just sit in hospital and they will die gradually because there's no drug, no funding, you know. So and people felt, okay, there's need for them to move, and they move. And at that time, the trade unions was being led by Tsvangirai, was the head of the trade unions. Of course, Tsvangirai is an opportunist. He's never a serious person, as far as I'm concerned. So it's not a genuine socialist or Marxist. He just sees the opportunity, you know, to at least tell people that this is the way forward. But at that time, it's hiding under the banner of trade unions. Okay, trade unions and workers, we can move. Of course, he actually provided the leadership, but it's not genuine. So when trade unions started to move and they felt that Mugabe is not going to allow them, then they metamorphosized into MDC, the Movement for Democratic Change. That was actually what happened. So they moved to MDC as a political platform and started nursing their own ambition. Of course, they did incredibly well in 2000 elections, but of course they were rigged out. But as a result of some of this crisis, imperialists will not allow their privilege to go without a fight. That is it. And Mugabe felt, okay, that MDC, because of their own class position, they have their own class position to protect. So they align with the white farmers and the imperialists to say, okay, we want Mugabe to go. You know? Because one, they don't want Mugabe to implement land reforms, and because some of the crises which Mugabe has accepted, like structural adjustment program, World Bank IMF loan, is actually causing crisis, and people are looking for alternative. So in other words, they substitute themselves as alternative, you know, to say, okay, workers don't look for one socialist something, look to us, we are able to provide leadership. Whereas Tsvangirai is no more or less like a right-wing bureaucrat. So, and when the REIT started, you know, sanctions, economic sanctions, and some other things on Zimbabwe, you know, that actually brought Mugabe regime to news, then people started dying, you know, cholera and some other things. And they can't import, they can't do anything. So, and when the election now came in 2008, then Tsvangirai now also offered himself as alternative. Of course, there's no genuine alternative than the right-wing bureaucrat led by Tsvangirai. So, and he offered himself, and people felt, okay, this is still better than Mugabe. And that was what actually happened. Tsvangirai never hide his he has interest to return the lands to white farmers, which everybody knows. But because he's not genuine, then Mugabe regime doesn't take him serious. And in course of my observation, you know, in course of my research on Zimbabwe, I felt that if Tsvangirai have actually told the line of Lenin, I know by now Mugabe regime will have finished. But because, you know, one leg socialism, one leg capitalism, you know, like a reformist, you know, is a right wing reformer. So there's no way you can use reformism for capitalism. It's just like you are building your dynamite, you know, you are building your foundation on dynamite, which will explode. So and Mugabe doesn't take him serious. So that is why he was able to at least launch some of the attacks on some of the supporters. And admin, they are really socialist, and there was a mass movement, socialists are moving, there was strike and everything. Mugabe could not have done what he did to them, you know, by systematically using police and the state to at least kill some of those people. Because actually a lot of people will fight back and they will overthrow the regime. But because this Tsvangirai and the other oppositions, they've aligned themselves to the right wings, to the imperialists. So, and that's why people don't, you know, a lot of people don't take them serious. So that is the problem. And now currently you see him in every week in New York, Washington, what is he doing? So this actually confirmed that, you know, personally, it's not is a reformer that doesn't offer alternative. All what he wants is that, okay, he wants to be president, and he doesn't want a form of economic collapse as it actually happened in Zimbabwe just now. So the opposition in Zimbabwe is not going to last for a very long time. Although people are yearning for change, but the platform within which opposition build themselves is not something that is going to challenge the ruling regime in Zimbabwe. Yeah, I think I've actually adequately answered your question. Okay. Then on Niger Delta, the situation in Niger Delta is pathetic, you know, as UNEA actually asked for, because you can't kill the egg, is it an English proverb? A goose that laid the golden egg. You can't actually kill the goose that laid the golden egg. You know, Niger Delta has been like a source of revenue to Nigeria. At least 90% of oil revenue come from Niger Delta. And since the exploration of oil in Nigeria, virtually all the sectors like agriculture, industry have actually collapsed because people now shift to oil, you know, as an alternative. And because of 50 years of exploration of oil in Niger Delta, you know, the ruling class have actually used the region, you know, as a platform through which they extract some of this money without any development. If you go to Niger Delta today, virtually all the societies, because I've been there once, you can't pass there without a pipe. You see, one OFM laying pipe, another one laying pipe. They are virtually being surrounded by pipe, and some of those places they are Greek, and some of the lands there, you know, we see some of those pipelines. So that is why some of those pipelines are vulnerable for, you know, for militants blowing them up at slighted provocation. Why? Because they don't develop some of those areas. There's no clean water, no environmental degradations, problems, hazard, you know, unemployment, and some of the people's, their own ruling class, some of the state governors and local governors, you know, siphon some of those money, corruptions. There's no redevelopment. And it got to a time that people now started agitating. Then in 1990, then the likes of Saruwa started agitating. You know, his own is just like agitation, and like use of leaflets. Go to where people gather, give them leaflets, this is the problem, let's fight this problem. But Nigerian state clamped down on him, killing. That was on 1996. So because of the agony, people felt, okay, maybe there's need for them to fight other day. And because of some of this underdevelopment in the areas and the problem that capitalism actually put there, and people find, okay, the only way they can solve the problem is by taking law into themselves. That's why you see in the recent time, kidnappings, blowing up of pipelines, and some other things, oil bunkering, they also go to some of those pipes, cut some of those pipes, extract some of those oil, sell it to other countries, or other countries that are interested. So these are some of the things that they have been doing in Niger Deltas. And Nigerian government, because of financial crisis, you know, fall in oil price, they are also looking for excuse to clamp down on the militants. So that's why in the recent time, you know, there has been some shelling some of those villages, killing, you know, in like a pretext for, okay, we are looking for militants. So they are clamping down on some of those using military operations, you know, like what happened in Iraq. So that's what the situation is like. And people are still saying, okay, they are still continue to fight because some of those pipes, you can't work without a pipe. So, and if they continue shelling you, you can simply say, okay, in response to that, I can be shelling the pipes. So, and Nigerian government felt they are the one losing. And they now said, okay, what they want to do is to give like amnesty. What is amnesty? That they are going to give like $550 billion, which is like $400 million, to the militants. You know? And the next question is, by the time you give them $400 million, and by the time they collect this one, that okay, they should collect money, some of them want to go to school, some of them want to do business. By the time they collect this money, the problem remains. Then what happens next? So will people not fight in the later days? So those are the questions that the ruling class don't answer. And it's clear that they don't want to solve the problem. They just want to say, okay, you guys, you are the criminals. We are going to give you amnesty. We are going to pardon you. and we are going to give you $300 million. So that was clear thing of what the bourgeois are doing. They are tactically avoiding the real questions in Niger Delta, and they want to give money to people, and which will backfire in the coming period, because by the time all those boys collect the money and the situation doesn't improve, then another set of boys will also rise up to say they also want some money. By the time you give them money, another people will also rise up to say they want money. That is how the problem will continue. So that's why I said, until capitalism is overthrown, there's no way the Niger Delta problem will not keep on recurring in the future. So that's on Niger Delta. And lastly, on Ben asked about Madagascar. Yeah, Madagascar has been in the news for the past few months. And the real question is because, you know, the economy is just like a tourist economy. You know, because of the islands, so tourists, although they have quite a lot of mineral resources, but they are just like tourist economy, foreigners coming there like VC, summer VC pay, you know, tourist centers. And it is an economy that is being dependent on international aids. So there's no major something. And as a result of some of this aid, you know, the imperialists cannot give you aids without some stringent conditionalities. So these are things that's happening in Madagascar. And people and the workers felt there's no redevelopment. Because by the time I give you aids, that okay, go and privatize, go and commercialize, go and do some of those terrible reforms. You know, it is the people and the workers that feel the heat. So that was what happened in Madagascar, and people protested. Then the president, the local governors, who is a DJ, you know, a former DJ, like a musician, a DJ, you know, and seized the opportunity, you know, he hijacked the struggle from the people and said, look, I'm able to provide the alternative for you. And people followed him. You know, I imagine being a DJ, lead a protest. No, he can't do that, but he hijacked the protest. And people actually see him as the savior. Why? Because there was no alternative left socialist platform. No traditional organizations that people can actually rally around. So that was the problem. And people actually looked to him. You know, it got to a point that when workers strike, the president of the country ordered soldiers to kill people, and soldiers refused. That they are not trained to be killing their own people. So that was the crux of the situation. So yeah, then it got to a time that soldiers doesn't take order from the president again. They take order from the what? From the leaders of the movement, which the DJ has actually hijacked. And at the end of the day, they were able to force the president out, and he was forced to resign, and the DJ take over. So that was actually what happened. It's not because the guy was interested, no, but because he seized the opportunity, he hijacked the protest, and people see him as the leader of the movement. And of course, we can actually predict that in the coming days, he's not going to do anything new, substantial. He's not going to do anything new, because the foundation upon which he built himself, it's also like a right-wing reformers, and which will not last, because in the coming days, people will also hold him responsible for some of these policies that he's about to embark on. And for now, the regime is not stable. You know, it's sanctions from everywhere, you know, through like illegal, like coup d'etat, military takeover. And some of these things, and as a masses, we can predict what might actually come out of the situation, because there's no concrete program. There's no plan economy. There's no plan program. You just come to power because you want to be president. So in the coming period, if the crisis continues, then the workers and the people will call for his head. No more, no less. So that's what happened in Madagascar for now. Although it might appear stable because the workers and the people felt, okay, they've actually overthrown the old regime. But the real problem, the real contradictions in Madagascar still remains as of today. And in the coming days, if the so-called president is not addressing it, then people might also actually call for his head and call for protest again. So that's what is happening in Madagascar. I think I've adequately answered some of the questions.
Thanks very much, Bayo.